Welcome to The Operative Word, a podcast brought to you by the Journal of the American College of Surgeons. I'm Dr. Jamie Coleman, and throughout this series, Dr. Dante Yeh and I will speak with recently published authors about the motivation behind their latest research and the clinical implications it has for the practicing surgeon. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and not necessarily that of the American College of Surgeons.
Welcome to The Operative Word, a podcast from the Journal of the American College of Surgeons. I'm Dr. Jamie Coleman, one of your hosts for this series. In this episode, I am joined by Dr. Bradley Kushner, and we will be taking an in-depth look into his current article, COVID Vaccination Status and Operative Outcomes After Kidney Transplantation. Dr. Kushner is a general surgery resident at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Kushner, welcome to The Operative Word.
Dr. Coleman, thank you so much for having me. It's truly a pleasure to be here and really excited to share our work with Jax and the rest of the community on COVID vaccination and patient adherence.
Great. All right. So before we get into it, because we're definitely headed there, do you have any conflicts of interest that you would like to disclose?
No, I do not personally have any conflicts of interest, and no authors on the paper who were affiliated with the work also have no conflicts of interest.
Perfect. All right. Well, first, congratulations on the paper and its publication. It's always a big moment for all of us, and I think especially too when you're still in training. But what really stuck out to me for this is that I feel like it's really adding a unique aspect to our COVID literature. We've got great papers that have come out and they've really talked about outcomes, but kind of as it relates to having a coinciding COVID infection. But this paper, it's different. I can't wait for our listeners to hear about it. So to back up a little bit, as we know, someone who's receiving or undergoing an organ donation, it's really a lifelong commitment. I mean, it requires a lot of follow-ups and compliance with medications, lab draws, and office appointments. And in your paper, what we're really talking about is patient compliance. In other words, how potentially our patients' decisions regarding the COVID vaccine may give us some insight or tell us a little bit about their compliance with other non-COVID related decisions with their healthcare. Can you just start by telling us a little bit about this concept and the idea behind your paper?
Yeah, absolutely. So you hit the nail right on the head. Kidney transplantation is the best available treatment that we really have for patients with end-stage renal disease. It provides them extra quality of life years and improved quality of life in general. However, promoting graft longevity and preventing this allosensitization is truly a huge problem and requires patients to be really compliant with these medication regimens, these lab draws, so that these organs can last them quite a while, even upwards of 15 to 20 years. Unfortunately, patient adherence in this population in general is notoriously low. Around 20 to 35% of patients actually struggle with adherence.
And oh, wow. So let's pause there for half a second. So yeah. Over one quarter, or about one quarter to even almost one third of patients struggle with compliance. And can you tell us a little bit about how that relates to the survival of their kidney transplant?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that in general, patients who have medication non-adherence and non-compliance are directly at increased risk for late rejection. Graft loss secondary to non-adherence is the predominant cause of antibody-mediated late rejection and confers a 5- to 7-fold increased risk of graft loss. So in general, even throwing COVID vaccinations and COVID infections general out of the window, really identifying patients who are at risk for non-compliance is critical for having these grafts survive to their fullest extent.
And so that was how you started with this. I mean, because really, like, how did it come to you and come to your group of investigators that, hey, we should look at COVID vaccines? Because my understanding is that most centers now actually require their patients to get a COVID vaccine. Is that what you found in this study?
Yeah, exactly. So we're one of the only centers in the country that at the early part of the pandemic were actually not requiring our patients to get a mandatory COVID vaccine before their transplant. And many centers have actually executed that as for this very reason, that if there's any risk of COVID-related injury to the organ, you want to be sure that they reduce that risk of injury as much as possible. So we had a really unique opportunity at WashU to look at these differences in organ survival and patient adherence based on the fact that we allowed patients to decide whether they received a COVID vaccination or not preoperatively.
Okay, and to highlight then a little bit more of your methods, so you guys looked at patients at your single academic center, right? From February 2021 to May 22. So this was completely retrospective review, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was completely retrospective, and certainly the cutoff date was a little bit challenging and required a little bit of forethought. We chose around 3 months after the FDA had approved for emergency use the first COVID vaccination. So 3 months after that date was around February 2021, and that's when we started including patients who received a kidney transplant.
Okay, great. Well, let's dig into the findings a little bit. So tell us, yeah, just kind of summarize for us, for our listeners who maybe haven't had a chance to read your paper yet. What did you guys find?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, this was a retrospective cohort study for around a 15-month period. We looked at all patients who during that time period had a deceased donor kidney transplant. So it is important to highlight some of the exclusion criteria and the patients that we did ultimately exclude, those including patients who underwent living donation, and certainly happy to talk about the reasons why we excluded those. But we also excluded patients who had simultaneous organs, so underwent a liver, kidney at the same time, or heart, kidney, or patients who actually had multiple transplants during that study period, as well as pediatric patients, so those younger than 18 years old. Ultimately, we included 301 patients in our study. Around 40% of those were female. And in total, patients spent around 2.5 years on dialysis during that time frame. Looking at the vaccinated versus unvaccinated group, 78% were vaccinated. And, you know, I'll just pause here for a second and say how we define vaccinated, because I think that's also important to include in some of our methods. Certainly, we included patients at a time where vaccination was quite early. So we decided to denote patients as vaccinated if they had received one or more doses of any mRNA or FDA-approved vaccine. So they didn't have to have their completed full set of mRNA vaccines. They just had to have at least one dose. And we included that as vaccinated.
Thank you for clarifying that, because you're right. At what point do you start looking at this? Do you really expect people to have kind of gotten the information they think they need to make that decision? So it was interesting. You gave people, you know, really, even really kind of over 3 months, if you think about the lead up information about the vaccine coming. I do want to ask a little bit about why you excluded your living related, because I would think that there might have actually been some patterns there with people who are donating who maybe didn't want to undergo the vaccine as well as the recipient. I was just curious there.
Yeah, we found looking at our data retrospectively, not including this study, but in other studies, that our living donors are a very different patient population than many of our deceased donors. They're often younger. Their socioeconomic statuses are different. The racial breakdown of these patients are often different. And just for the sense of reducing as much bias in our study as possible, we decided to exclude them. Around 80% of our patients at our transplant center are deceased recipients. So even with excluding these living donors and living recipients, we felt that we had a pretty good robust data set to choose from.
Okay. Well, so overall, you had, like you said, just slightly over 301 patients who were in the study. 234 were vaccinated, again, with that definition of having received one dose. 67 were unvaccinated. So let's talk about non-adherence. What did you all find after the end of the study period?
So, you know, I'll first start off and say non-adherence is certainly difficult to define. And there's many ways that you know, studies have looked at kind of patient non-adherence and adherence in previous studies. Most of the transplant literature, when looking at this data, looks at the number of subtherapeutic tacrolimus troughs, so the main immunosuppression that we use in transplant, as well as the number of times that patients will show up to their clinic visit. So we felt that these were kind of the best surrogate markers that we had. Certainly not a perfect match for compliance, but kind of the best that we had available. So what we found was pretty incredible. Looking specifically at the vaccinated and non-vaccinated cohort, the non-vaccinated patients had an increased number of average number of clinic visits missed, as well as an increased average number of subtherapeutic tacrolimus troughs. Looking at the data a little bit differently, around 50% of non-vaccinated patients missed three or more non-clinic visits, as compared to only around a fourth or 25% of vaccinated patients. So quite a stark difference between the two groups.
Yeah, that's really what I think got me too when I was looking through this, because they're statistically significant, but then you're like, well, if they missed one more appointment, or, you know, they had one, you know, increased number of troughs, but really you're talking about 28%, which still though I was struck by was a pretty high number of patients that missed three or more. I mean, again, this wasn't one or two visits that they missed. You really, you know, you looked at three or more post-op visits who missed, and you had 28% who missed three or more in your vaccinated group, compared to almost 50% missed at least three clinic visits in your unvaccinated group. And then we start looking at those levels too. And it was, let's see here, I've got it 1.7 on average subtherapeutic FK levels on your vaccinated group versus 3.9. Again, that wasn't subtle. Were you surprised by this finding at all?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, going into the study, we knew that noncompliance was a major factor in all of our deceased kidney transplant patients. So as I think I previously mentioned it, but other studies have showed that as many 25 to 30% of patients are not adherent to their postoperative medication regimens. And also other studies have shown that 35 to 40% of graft losses are actually attributed to this non-adherence. So we certainly thought that we would see quite a bit of non-adherence in subtherapeutic tacrolimus troughs. We just weren't expecting that the non-vaccinated cohort to even have more significant burden of non-adherence than kind of the baseline average deceased donor kidney transplant patient.
Well, let's kind of do this layer by layer. So first I'm going to say, let's talk about non-adherence just in general. So unrelated to this paper with, you know, COVID and the vaccine, we're going to come back to that. But what has been found? What is your center trying to do to understand why it's happening so we can improve this? I mean, we're talking about people are, there are barriers there that are causing people to not be able to, or not maybe even understand the importance of this follow-up and the medication compliance. So what strategies do you all have in place? You know, where is your center with all this and trying to just get it better overall?
Yeah, that's kind of the million-dollar question. Compliance is certainly very challenging, and is also what has been kind of pitched as dynamic. So non-compliance can certainly be isolated. It could be recurrent or repeated. Many times, if it's isolated, it usually doesn't lead to a problem, but where we really find issues is that the recurrent or the repeated levels of compliance is what leads to recurrent hospitalizations, ultimately decreased renal function, and then eventual graft loss. To date, there's really been no smoking gun that's been found. It's really a combination of socioeconomic, disease-related factors, healthcare organizational barriers, and therapy-related factors, kind of all interlinked to create this web of non-compliance and eventual graft loss. Some of the ways in kind of the Midwest population, some of the challenges that we have is many of our patients are from a very rural area. We have a very, very large catchment area all the way from kind of the southern aspect of our state down to Arkansas and all the way up to Chicago and 300 to 400 miles around. So we are very fortunate that we have robust clinic coordinators and nurse coordinators that are able to reach out to patients, get in touch with them, and can actually visit them locally to discuss some of the factors to help to improve their compliance. During COVID period and early vaccination, all patients had the opportunity to meet with their coordinators, and all coordinators stressed multiple times throughout the waiting list process to go to their local healthcare agency to get a COVID vaccination. There certainly wasn't a difference in the amount that we pushed patients to get COVID vaccinations, depending on where they lived. But certainly, as you can imagine, there's many socioeconomics and disease-related factors and geopolitical barriers that patients faced.
For sure. And I think, you know, COVID really highlighted that for us. And I think that that is really a bit of what struck me with this, because when I think about our patients who chose not to get the COVID vaccine, you know, you can understand it to a certain extent, right? There was so much and is so much bad information out there about the COVID vaccine and side effects. And it also, it became politicized, unfortunately, for a lot of people. And so the reasons for people choosing to not get vaccinated, to me, I can work through, you know, that they seem a little bit obvious, you know, in a sense. But I guess for me, it was almost taking that leap of that's an indicator for additional or potential future non-adherence to something that isn't COVID related. In other words, the fact that there was bad information out there about COVID, how did that impact people's decisions to get their blood drawn or to take their medication for their kidney transplant, which, as you stated again with your methods, these recipients, these patients were on dialysis for an average of 2.5 years before their transplant. So in other words, they've been dealing with just the crushing, has to be, reality of their kidney failure for years. So, you know, where did you see that overlap, or why do you think that is? Why do you think that a decision that seems like it should be completely independent of their behavior after a kidney transplant didn't seem like it really was? Do you have any theories on that?
Yeah, it's certainly complicated. As we mentioned before, I think the politicalization of COVID vaccination makes it challenging for many of our rural patient populations. I think if you look at our patients as compared to maybe some of the other larger transplant centers around the country, maybe on the coasts, we cater towards a much more rural population, a much more conservative population that has typically been associated with some barriers against the COVID vaccination. You know, one of the things that we're looking into in the future in some of these prospective works that we're doing as follow-up is some of the geopolitical barriers that our patient populations have faced. So their education status, their higher degree status, as well as their average income, and potentially some of their political swings as well, to see if there was a relationship between those. While we don't want this to be a blame game or to say that these patients should not be getting the organs, what we want to do is potentially identify patients who are at greater risk for having issues postoperatively. So we know that maybe one non-adherence episode may not lead to any difference in short-term outcomes, but if these non-adherence is repeated over a multiple period or a long period of time on several levels, this patient is at risk for losing their graft. So our goal is to really look at any surrogates that can tell us that patients are at risk. And whether this be preoperative COVID vaccination, that would be great. So that the fact that we can really identify these patients, so that our transplant coordinators follow up with these patients more and really look at any psychosocial screening prior to transplantation to improve the outcome for this type of patient is our true goal.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, and that came across very well in the paper that, you know, really, it's just like any other high-risk marker for a poor outcome. How can we find it so that we can deliver the solutions and deliver the support that these patients need? Because their goal is our goal and our goal is their goal. You know, we're on the same team with this, and that they want to live a long, healthy life, and we want to give them the means to do so. And I agree with you. I think that this is just another effort at trying to figure out who needs what in order to get us to the same goal and get us across the finish line. What do they need and how do we get them there? And it may not look the same for every patient that has these episodes of non-adherence. So I really applaud you all on your efforts on this really important topic and approaching it really in a novel way. Thank you so much for your time today. This was just great. We really appreciate you and all your efforts and taking the time to discuss your recent article. And thank you to our listeners as well. If you happen to have any feedback for us here at The Operative Word, please drop us a line at postmaster@facs.org.
Thank you very much, Dr. Coleman, for your time and the efforts for putting this together. And if anyone would like to reach out for further questions, I'm certainly available by email or phone at any time.
Thank you. See you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Journal of the American College of Surgeons Operative Word podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode, spread the word on social media by using the hashtag JACSOperativeWord. Subscribe to The Operative Word wherever podcasts are available, or listen on the American College of Surgeons website at facs.org/podcast.